apologize on behalf of the court for keeping you waiting. We had a relatively short lunch hour and some meetings that have delayed us. I want to welcome the Wauwatosa East High School students. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. I'm told that this is your ninth year of participating in this program of Court with Class.
Wow, so I hope you graduate soon.
Thank you very much for doing this. And I know the effort it takes to bring out a class, and the effort it takes to deal with legal material. And you all have gotten some materials about this case and have dealt with it. And now we're going to listen to lawyers. And you're part of thousands of students who have come from all over the state to learn about the judicial branch. And of the three branches of government, the judicial branch is least well known. Retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor is fond of saying that more Americans can name the judges on American Idol than can name the judges of any court, including the United States Supreme Court. And that is a telling matter about the importance of civic education and knowledge of the judicial branch. What happens here, what happens in this case, will affect many people in the state for many, many years. So thank you for coming. And I know you met with Justice Bradley in the noon hour, and that she answered all your questions and then some.
They answered some of mine, too, Chief, so that was good.
Well, that's a good exchange. Okay, well, thank you very much. We're now going to hear our third case and our last case for the scheduled March arguments, 11AP 1121, Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, Inc. versus Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. Arguing on behalf of Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast is Adam Bartosi. Is that how you pronounce your name?
That's right.
Counsel, the podium is yours.
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Adam Bartosi. I'm with the law firm Mallory & Zimmerman, and I represent the petitioner, Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, Inc. Thank you for this opportunity. EA Green Bay LLC, doing business as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin, and its owner, Matt Everett, collectively operated a Paul Davis Restoration franchise. To avoid paying damages they intentionally caused to my client, they attempt to hide behind the veil of their trade name by playing fast and loose with the courts, by arguing form over substance, and by mischaracterizing the law. In the interest of justice, the court must allow my client to collect its damages. To understand why we're here, it's critical for the court to understand how we got here. My client is also a franchisee of Paul Davis Restoration. Paul Davis Restoration businesses perform emergency mitigation and reconstruction services on real estate damaged by fire, flood, and other casualties. Under their respective franchise agreements, my client had the exclusive right to do business in Southeast Wisconsin, and the respondent held the exclusive rights to do business in Northeast Wisconsin. Under the franchisor's rules, an owner is not allowed to work in another owner's territory unless it pays a fee to the territory holder on each job in that territory. In 2009, my client filed an arbitration claim against the respondent because the respondent was working in my client's exclusive territory without paying the cross-territory fees. In response to my client's arbitration claim, the respondent in the arbitration proceedings asserted defenses and filed counterclaims against my client making similar allegations. An arbitration hearing before a panel of three arbitrators was conducted to resolve these claims. At the arbitration hearing, my client's owner, Dan Drummel, testified on behalf of his franchise, and the respondent's owner, Matt Everett, testified on behalf of his franchise about all claims and counterclaims. Each franchise was also represented by counsel at the arbitration. After hearing testimony and legal argument, the arbitration panel issued a written award holding that the respondent's franchise owed my client in excess of $100,000 in unpaid fees on jobs that worked in my client's exclusive territory. The written award identified the respondent's franchise as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. After the respondent refused to pay the award, my client filed an action in Milwaukee County Circuit Court to confirm the award and to start the collection process. In that action, my client moved the court to add the name EA Green Bay LLC to the award because that entity operated under the trade name Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
Counselor, by what mechanism did you obtain personal jurisdiction over the corporation, the LLC?
In the Milwaukee County action?
Yes. Uh-huh. Did you serve them with a summons and complaint? And if you did, by what mechanism did you do that?
Well, in arbitration confirmation, it does not require a summons and complaint. You file a notice with the court that there was an arbitration and that you're going to move to confirm the arbitration.
Okay.
That confirmation, that notice was served personally on an officer of EA Green Bay LLC doing business as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
Okay. But you're trying to get a judgment against a corporation, and you have to have personal jurisdiction over a corporation before you can get judgment. And my understanding was they were not named in the arbitration proceeding, so I just assumed you somehow were getting personal jurisdiction over them in the Milwaukee County Circuit Court action.
In the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, okay, I understand the question.
You understand what I'm trying to
say?
Yes,
I understand the question. In
okay,
the Milwaukee
thanks.
County Circuit Court action.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. In that action, I believe, and we moved to have the arbitration award confirmed against the trade name and also the entity name. I don't recall if we actually named EA Green Bay LLC as a defendant because it was, in our opinion, sufficient to name Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. And it goes back to the Jacobs, Binion, and Capsavage cases, which says, in the Capsavage case specifically, it says that a reference to an entity is the same thing as a reference to the trade name. So that case law treats those names interchangeably by naming the trade name, it was the equivalent of naming the company name.
Well, I understand the naming that you're saying. I'm just concerned about personal jurisdiction. Because if you want a judgment against a person or a corporation, you have to serve them according to the provisions of the statute. And I didn't see anybody talk about whether there was personal jurisdiction over the LLC, and that was bothering me when I read the brief. So that's what my question comes from, frankly.
Well, to answer that question, I guess how I would answer that question is to say that we established personal jurisdiction by serving an officer of EA Green Bay LLC doing business as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
Okay. And the service, the proof of service is in the record and stuff.
Correct.
Okay.
Counsel, suppose that you had an arbitration award against me, and then I went under several names, Shirley Abrahamson, Shirley Askin, Shirley Adorable,
right, Claire.
Shirley Temple, keeping my initials SA,
okay.
because that's my monogram on my towels. So, they're all me. I'm only one me. And if you sued me under any name other than Abrahamson, which is my legal name, although I think you can call yourself anything you want, as long as you don't violate copyright or trademark or registered names. If you sued me under any of those names, and you got judgment against me under Shirley Apple, can you garnish my bank account? Or can you take a judgment against that and then get execution under my assets, no matter what they're under, because they're all me?
I would think, well, there's a couple of issues there. In going back to the case law, which says that the names are used interchangeably,
yeah,
and that an entity and its trade name are indistinct, in your case, Chief Justice and her nicknames are indistinct.
Right.
And in that case, to get the judgment, we would have to establish personal jurisdiction. In order to do that, we would personally serve you.
Right. Under any name.
Correct. And if you showed up,
right,
defended yourself, exactly, and the court found liability.
Yeah.
And a judgment was entered against just your nickname, equitably, I would think you would be able to enforce it against just your nickname. And here's the rub in this case, is that,
right,
the judgment in the Milwaukee County action named Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
Right.
The account in this case that we're attempting to garnish also bears that name.
Right.
And the example that you gave...
I know, it was a tougher example. I think this one's an easier one. Because the bank account has Paul Davis N.E. on it.
Correct. But I think that distinguishes it from the facts of this case.
Right.
So in your example, I would say under the existing case law, which says that an entity and its trade name are indistinct and that they're one and the same, the names are interchangeable, and there's three cases that have said that. In addition, in the Jacobs case, which is cited at length in the briefs, that was an appeal of a judgment, a jury verdict judgment that was entered against Michael Limbach Construction. Michael Limbach Construction was just a trade name. The Court of Appeals in that case affirmed that judgment. And it also in that case determined that the trial court directly calculated the damages, that the trial court correctly advised the jury, and that the insurance company for Limbach Construction Company was required to defend Limbach Construction Company in that case. So based on the case law, to answer your question, my answer would be yes, you would be able to enforce it against that account if you can indisputably establish that Chief Justice also goes by the nicknames that you referenced.
That's right. How is a doing business as, or a trade name, a legal entity capable of suing and being sued? Under what theory are you operating to satisfy that?
I'm operating on two theories. First of all, the case law. The case law says that an entity and its trade name are indistinct. If they're indistinct, then they're the same thing, and it just identifies them by name. The case law also says that a reference to one is the same as a reference to the other. In addition, there's no statute that says that a trade name cannot be sued or sue. And to draw an analogy on this situation, and it's the Wisconsin version of the Uniform Commercial Code, 403.401 and 403.402. In 403.401, it states that you can execute a promissory note or any other negotiable instrument in the name of a trade name. And when you do that, 403.402 says it's enforceable against the corporation. So there's another example of Wisconsin law treating a trade name and its corporation as the same thing.
Now, I just looked at the statute again. If you want to confirm an award, any party to the arbitration can apply to the court within the award was made, and the court must grant such an order unless the award is vacated, modified, or corrected. Notice in writing of the application shall be served upon the adverse party or the adverse party's attorney. And you say you served the corporation?
We served the corporation, that's correct.
What was the name of the corporation?
The name of the corporation? In what capacity?
Well, you served a corporation doing business as Paul Davis, right?
Paul Davis, Restoration Northeast.
Right.
I have the service affidavits. Can I reference them?
That is that.
Excuse me.
It's okay. That's. Go ahead. You can find that later.
The service was, the name on the affidavit of service was the, in the process server's affidavit, it references the case number and it references Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. And the party that was served was Matt Everett, who's the owner of EA Green Bay LLC, doing business as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
No one's objected to that service?
No.
Okay.
Is that in the record?
That there's no objection?
No. Is that document in the record?
I don't think it's, I don't know. I don't know. The issue didn't come up before Judge Seidmilder in Brown County. The judge dealt with all the issues that have been briefed to the court, so I don't know that that's supported by the record, but it would be a public record on file with Milwaukee County Courts.
Well, that's one of the little problems we have here, isn't it? You've got an arbitration award, and the full arbitration proceedings are not here. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You've got a Milwaukee County confirmation award, and those full proceedings are not here.
Correct.
The only thing we have full is the garnishment summons and complaint and the garnishment proceedings, right?
Correct.
So we've got two other proceedings upon which this garnishment rests in part, but the records are not completely here.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, and I acknowledge that, but the reason that is because this is it's a garnishment action. It's a statutory action. It's a collateral action to an existing judgment. I think this is a more complicated case. Based on the facts, but the statutes and this being a collateral action remain the same.
And what do you need for a garnishment action? You need a plaintiff?
Under the garnishment statutes, and that's Chapter 812, you need a judgment creditor. You need...
And you're a judgment creditor.
The petitioner is the judgment creditor. You need a judgment debtor. The judgment debtor is... Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin, who does business, and that's the trade name for EA Green Bay LLC. And then you need a garnishee. The garnishee in this case is Denmark State Bank. And you need a garnishee indebted to the judgment debtor. And we have all three of those in this case.
Well, and in what title does the Denmark Bank hold this asset?
Both the trade name and the entity name appear on the Denmark State Bank account.
So what's the problem?
I don't think there is a problem.
Well, what did the Court of Appeals say? You lost there. You won in the trial court. A Judge Seidmilder held for you, didn't hold for you. I'm sorry.
Apologize for interrupting. Correct. Judge Seidmilder...
For you, Court of Appeals didn't.
Right. Correct. The Court of Appeals, what their decision deviated from the case law. What the Court of Appeals said is that an LLC legally exists, but its trade name is a legal non-entity. And that directly contradicts what the Cap Savage, Binion, and Jacobs case say, which say that an entity and its trade name are indistinct. The trial court followed the analysis in Binion, Cap, Savage, and Jacobs and reached the correct conclusion. The Court of Appeals overturned it, didn't follow the case law, and I believe it's incorrect. And I also think that the Court of Appeals decision was internally inconsistent because on the one hand it says that an entity's trade name has no legal existence. Mm-hmm. But then it acknowledges in that same paragraph that an entity's trade name can own assets. So under that Court of Appeals decision, an entity's trade name is legally insufficient to be a judgment debtor, but is legally sufficient to hold assets. That almost puts any asset held in the name of a trade name out of reach, because if a trade name can't be a judgment debtor, how can you ever garnish an account held in the name of a trade name or any other asset held in the name of a trade name? And I think for those reasons, the Court of Appeals was wrong.
Well, you're saying that they're just bad in the first sentence or second sentence. Northeast argues that because it is doing business as designee, the underlying judgment against it is void and unenforceable and cannot form the basis for the present garnishment action. You think that's internally inconsistent?
Look,
do you think that sentence is wrong?
I didn't. Can you repeat that?
Sure.
Northeast argues that because it is doing business as designee, the underlying judgment against it is void as unenforceable and cannot form the basis for the present garnishment action.
And the question is, do I think that's wrong?
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's wrong.
That's why they reversed.
Correct.
They say you're not separate and distinct. You're not a legal entity. That is not you, but Northeast. And therefore, the underlying judgment is void.
Correct. That's their position.
That's like saying that a judgment against me is Shirley Apple would be void because that's not my real name.
Correct. And I think that under the hypothetical, the facts that are here and the hypothetical that you provided, if somebody shows up wearing a mask, they defend themselves, and you get a judgment against that person, regardless of what name they operate under, if they put their name on an account and the face behind the mask is the Chief Justice, those assets should be available to collect the damages that the Chief Justice caused.
Well, they use Jacob against you. You use it for you. That confuses me.
Well, I think the Jacob case, there's a footnote in that case, okay? And the footnote, I think, it's inconsistent with the rest of the ruling. What the footnote says is Limbach Construction Company was the trade name in that case, and it was owned by Michael Limbach. Michael Limbach died. So a question came up, well, would this be enforceable against the estate? And the court says, arguably, there's certain law that supports that it would not be enforceable against the state. It doesn't elaborate at that point. It just puts a quote in there that the trade name is not distinct from Michael Limbach. But if it's not distinct, then it's the same thing. In addition, in order to take a judgment against an estate, although it's not stated in there, you have to specifically name the estate as a defendant in the action.
And it wasn't a substitute. They didn't substitute in that case.
Correct. But I don't think that takes away from the fact that that judgment was entered against just a trade name, and the Court of Appeals affirmed it.
Well, how do you get around the Cintas cases? The Cintas case.
What is the
Cintas, I think it is.
Oh, I think we get around that easily. In that case, there was an LLC. I don't know if they were different states, but there was articles of organization filed for one company, articles of organization filed for another company. One company employed the employee. The employee named the wrong company. So the party that was named in the lawsuit was not the same company. This was not a DBA situation. Those were two separate and distinct entities.
And here you only have one entity in your view.
Correct.
What about the judicial estoppel argument?
I think the judicial estoppel argument is persuasive. Judicial estoppel, the courts use judicial estoppel from preventing litigants from playing fast and loose with the courts by asserting inconsistent positions. In Milwaukee County, in response to our motion to have EA Green Bay LLC named as a defendant, the respondent's attorney said there's no need to name EA Green Bay LLC because a judgment against District Trade Name is, quote, enforceable as a matter of law. On the exact same facts in this garnishment case, they flip-flop that position and say, wait, a judgment against the trade name is unenforceable as a matter of law, so you can't enforce the judgment. So they got the benefit of the judgment in Milwaukee County and flipped it in this action so they can avoid it. I don't think that there's a more compelling case of a party playing fast and loose with the courts.
Do we have enough in the record to do that? In the Court of Appeals, I think, said you didn't develop that argument well enough, whoever argued that.
I think the Court of Appeals was wrong. We have a brief at the trial court that specifically made those points and asked the trial court to stop the argument from being made based on the inconsistent positions.
Trial court, you mean Green Bay, Brown County.
Correct. And that's brought up in my reply brief. And that reply brief has a citation to the actual paragraph where we made this argument.
Now, the third issue, because I want to get to it before you're finished, is the question is whether a judgment against an entity's trade name in a principal action can be collaterally attacked in the garnishment action.
Correct. What collateral attack, courts use collateral attack to stop trying a case twice. So, in this garnishment action is statutory. It's entirely statutory. You have a judgment debtor. You have a judgment creditor. Here's the judgment. Docket it. Rubber stamp it. Okay, is the garnishee indebted to the judgment debtor? Yes or no? In this case, yes. What the respondent is doing in this case is they're trying to say, okay, even though we baited the court in Milwaukee County to enter judgment against us, we want a second swing here, and we want to invalidate that judgment so we don't have to pay it. Under circumstances like these, courts use collateral attack to say, no, a judgment in a principal action is valid, it's binding, you don't get a second swing in a separate action.
Would they have appealed the Milwaukee County judgment?
Absolutely.
Did you have?
Yes. We did not appeal that case. We were confident that we could enforce it based on their position that it would be enforceable as a matter of law. So that issue was essentially taken off the table in Milwaukee County.
What about this floodgates argument? Oh, we let you do that, then anybody with some strange name, you can get a judgment against them and then enforce it against property.
I think that argument has no application to this case. We have a judgment against Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. We know who Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin is. We want to enforce the judgment that we have against the Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin named in the judgment. EA Green Bay LLC and Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin all do business at the same location, 655 Copenhagen Lane, Denmark, Wisconsin. We've got the right person. We've got the face behind the mask. There's no concern that anybody else operates under that trade name, and we're entitled to collect the judgment from that party.
Now,
can I finish that?
You may, yes, and then you'll have to be seated until your rebuttal.
Okay. As additional protection from that issue, Chapter 806.01 of the Wisconsin statutes is the judgment statute. It requires you to identify the party to the lawsuit, the litigant, and also requires you to provide an address. So for the same reason that a judgment against Tim Smith of Milwaukee wouldn't be enforceable against a Tim Smith of Dane County, a judgment against Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin out of Denmark wouldn't be enforceable against Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin out in California.
You know, what if there were three DBAs here instead of just the Paul Davis Restoration out of the Northeast? What if there was Paulie's was another name, and the other one was just Super Restoration? They're all DBAs of the same LLC. How does your argument fit with that?
Under the case law, I don't think it makes any difference. Under the case law, it says an entity and its trade name are indistinct in that they're one and the same. As a collector, you would have to put the pieces together and figure out who the entity, who the trade names are. But if you can tie all the trade names to the same entity, I don't think that it changes the analysis.
Well, what if the money's in the trade name and it's not in the LLC and you're suing on one trade name, but all the money's in another trade name?
Well, then you would have to establish that the LLC uses both of those trade names. And I think as a customer, as a consumer, what you want is transparency. This is an issue where there's no transparency. In a situation like that, you would have to clear all the smoke to figure out what's going on, but I don't think the analysis changes.
Can you clear the smoke in the garnishment? Can you show that Shirley Apple is Shirley Abrahamson in the garnishment?
There's in the garnishment statutes, you have the ability to have a trial about the garnishment. So that issue certainly, if somebody else showed up in a different name, they would defend themselves and say, that's not me, you got the wrong guy. That didn't happen here. We've got the right guy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Natalie, is it Sturschitz? Representing Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
Thank you, Your Honor. As you said, I'm Natalie Sturich, and I represent the respondent in this action. Thank you for the opportunity to present our case here today. In opening, the petitioner has accused our clients in his arguments of a number of things, of fraudulently transferring assets in an attempt to avoid just obligations, of mischaracterizing the law in this case. And it's our position that those accusations are an attempt by the petitioner to distract this court from the one underlying issue here, and that is that we have an underlying judgment against what I believe the case law of this state says is a legal non-entity, a trade name, which the petitioner is now attempting to enforce by way of a garnishment action rather than in the underlying confirmation proceedings in the Milwaukee County Circuit Court. The petitioner claims that in the interest of justice, this court must find in its favor. But it's our position that, in fact, the interest of justice will require this court to find otherwise, because the petitioner's position in this case would end up putting the burden on defendants, whether they be individuals or small businesses, to determine when they had been sued, whether they had been sued, whether a trade name that sounded perhaps similar to one used by them was being sued. The petitioner is asking that you put the burden on them to call newspapers, to check CCAP constantly, to see whether, in fact, there are lawsuits out there that could result in them losing assets. It's our position that that burden should be on plaintiffs to name the correct legal entities or individuals when they first file their lawsuits.
Could I ask counsel, that there was an arbitration here?
Yes.
And your opposing counsel said that Paul Davis Restoration of Northeastern Wisconsin appeared there?
That's correct. Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin and Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, the petitioner in this case, were franchises that were operating in the Paul Davis Restoration system. Under the Paul Davis Restoration franchise agreements, those franchises are offered the opportunity to resolve their disputes through binding arbitration, which they utilized in this case. And there were claims by each party that the opposing franchise had done work in their territory and was competing improperly in their territory.
Is there any dispute that the owner of this entity that you talked about was present at the arbitration?
No, Your Honor.
What?
The name E.L. Green Bay, E.A. Green Bay LLC,
yes,
mentioned in the arbitration?
No, actually. To the best of my knowledge, E.A. Green Bay was never named as a party at any point in the arbitration proceeding.
If they named it party. Our friend Matt was a shareholder in E.A. Green Bay, right?
Correct.
And E.A. Green Bay LLC was doing business as Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Is there any question about that?
No, there is no question about that.
No question about that in the arbitration?
In all honesty, Your Honor, I don't know whether E.A. Green Bay was mentioned in the arbitration or to what extent E.A. Green Bay might have been mentioned in the arbitration.
We have a very limited record.
I'm sorry?
We have a very limited record.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
I do know, it's my understanding, again, that E.A. Green Bay and Matt Everett were never named as parties in the arbitration proceedings. And they were never named as parties in the confirmation proceedings filed in Milwaukee County.
Well, you objected to that. Your client objected to naming them, didn't they?
Yes, he did.
In the arbitration?
No, in
Milwaukee County. After the confirmation motion was filed.
I have sort of an image. Now, you're not in this image because you weren't in the arbitration. Is that
correct?
Right? Whoever the attorney was representing Paul Davis Restoration of Northeastern Wisconsin is sitting there while there is an arbitration proceeding going on and saying, this poor sucker on the other side has sued or is involved in an arbitration with someone who can never be collected against. Is that?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
Is that the image? Is that a correct image?
No, it is not. And to give you some additional background on what goes on in these arbitration proceedings or what happened, I guess, specifically in this case, there were actually three franchises involved in the arbitration here. There was also an FXWI, Paul Davis Restoration of Fox Valley. There were arbitration awards to SEWI against both Fox Valley's FXWI and the respondent here, NOWI. The respondent in these proceedings was terminated involuntarily by Paul Davis, the franchisor, prior to SEWI's collecting on this judgment. And in fact, that franchise was terminated before SEWI even filed its motion to confirm the arbitration award in Milwaukee County. I believe the exact date when NOWI was terminated was March 1st of 2010. The confirmation motion was filed in May of 2010. My understanding of the arbitration procedures and the franchise procedures is that SEWI, the franchise, could have collected from NOWI, the franchise, but the franchisor terminated it before that happened. And
how can the overall entity terminate the losing party in an arbitration and thereby wipe out the rights of the party that prevailed?
Again, my understanding of this system is that that is the risk the parties enter into when they agree that they will resolve their disputes by binding arbitration under the system of the franchise, rather than doing it through the judicial system where they would have to name the appropriate underlying legal entities in order to collect on any judgment. There is obviously some risk involved in doing it that way, and in many cases there are ways to collect. But in this case, again, it was not the underlying legal entity of NOWI. It was not E.A. Green Bay, in other words, that terminated that franchise. It was the franchisor, Paul Davis Restoration Incorporated, that terminated that franchise in March of 2010.
So is it your position, therefore, the arbitration had to be null and void, and because once the franchise was lifted, the end?
Under the facts and circumstances of this case, it is.
Did you make that argument at arbitration?
I don't know.
Okay. Did you make that argument in Milwaukee County?
I don't know if that specific argument was made in Milwaukee County, but I do want to point out that in this case, we don't really know if any court would have held EA Green Bay, the actual legal entity underlying this trade name, responsible for any portion of the judgment. And we don't know that because EA Green Bay was not named as a party in the confirmation motion. It was not named as a party in the proceedings in Milwaukee County. And it has not been named as a party in this garnishment action. So that issue has never been litigated. It's our position that perhaps FEWI could have filed originally a summons and complaint against EA Green Bay. We don't know what would have happened. We don't know whether EA Green Bay ultimately would have been responsible for any judgment. But that was never litigated. And I don't believe a garnishment action is the appropriate place to litigate that issue.
Who do you represent, counsel?
EA Green Bay LLC, DBA NOWI.
You represent who?
EA Green Bay.
And doing business as what?
NOWI, Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. Okay. That's the response.
And doing business as works, too?
I'm sorry?
Doing business as works also?
No, Your Honor.
You don't do business as works anymore?
No, and in fact, EA Green Bay never did.
They dissolved, didn't they?
They did. They dissolved. By June of 2010, a bill of sale had been completed. My understanding, however, is that the agreement to dissolve EA Green Bay and to sell its assets was made in March of 2010 when NOWI was terminated by Paul Davis.
So you represent a non-existent corporation?
I represent a corporation that has been dissolved. However, my understanding is that the Wisconsin statutes require LLCs to wrap up their affairs even after they have dissolved. And I think this is an issue that needs to be taken care of and wrapped up.
So it's still alive and well?
For purposes of wrapping up its affairs only.
Okay.
Yes.
I sit here with a past life, and part of my past life was doing defense work for Employers Insurance of Wausau. And years ago, there was this logo of a train station and these ads all over the country that would be for Employers Insurance of Wausau. And they'd spell out W-A-U-S-A-U. And this it was a very, very popular ad, you know, hundreds of millions and millions and millions of dollars is spent. So Employers Insurance of Wausau would get sued, and it would be sued as Employers Insurance of Wausau. For Employers Insurance of Wausau was nothing more than a trade name that was an ad for 60 Minutes, which was a big show years ago and other things. And when the real name was Employers Mutual Liability Insurance Company of Wisconsin, Wausau wasn't even in the name of it. So what about all those cases that were settled or weeks of trial against Employers Insurance of Wausau? What happens to those? Were those nunc pro tunc? Do they not exist?
I don't know the specific facts and circumstances of those cases, but it is our position that in order for those judgments to be valid, they would have had to be against a legal entity. So I don't recall the specific name you gave for the underlying legal entity, but they would have had to be against that legal entity in order for them to be enforceable. And it's our position that that is not an unreasonable burden to put on plaintiffs.
We weren't just smart enough to raise that. We would have saved lots of money, I suppose.
We had a case, We Energies. Remember that? And it uses the conglomerate name, We Energies, but it had umpteen corporate entities. If I remember the case right, we said, you use We Energies, you're stuck with We Energies. That's you. We can sue you as We Energies.
I apologize, Your Honor. I am not familiar with that case and with the facts of that case. Again, though, it's in this case, we're here because of a garnishment action that was filed against a trade name. Mm-hmm.
And the trade name was used on the bank account, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
So why don't you just pay up? You got the judgment against this trade name. The bank account has a trade name on it. What's the problem?
There are two issues with the bank account. First, the assets in the bank account had been transferred to a new LLC, Building Works LLC, by the time this garnishment action was filed.
Isn't that the third name on the account?
The bank erroneously included that as an additional DBA, but in fact, and I believe the record in this case does demonstrate that Building Works LLC is in fact its own legal entity. It is not a trade name of EA Green Bay. So Building Works LLC now owns the assets in that bank account. And there is case law, including AG Services versus Krajcik and Lambert, an older Wisconsin Supreme Court case, that suggests that because those assets in that bank account are not, in fact, owned by the respondent in this case, they cannot be garnished. But the second issue with that bank account is that a trade name cannot own assets in a bank account. So any assets in that account, even though EA Green Bay, when it was operating as an LLC and when it was operating this franchise, it had NOWI as the trade name on that account. But NOWI cannot own assets and did not own the assets in that account.
Okay, so they don't own the assets, so does the bank keep it all? Because who can claim it? They're non-existent entity.
The underlying legal entity can claim it. So EA Green Bay, when it was in existence, owned those assets, but they have since been transferred to Building Works LLC, who now owns them. So NOWI is a trade name that was used by EA Green Bay, but it was never the owner of the assets in that account because it could not be.
If we should hold for your client, does this make it easier for debtors to get away with keeping their assets and not paying their judgments?
No. In fact, I think the opposite is true, because if a plaintiff discovers the name of an underlying legal entity and names the correct legal entity, then it will not matter how many trade names that entity is using, and it will not matter how many, bank accounts with different trade names on them that underlying legal entity is using to hold its assets. The plaintiff, in a case where the plaintiff names the correct legal entity, would be able to collect what it is owed, no matter the trade name that is being used. So, in fact, I think, and that was what I meant in my opening when I said that I think the interest of justice really requires that this court find in favor of NOWI, because otherwise, again, this court would be putting a huge burden on defendants, an unreasonable burden, I think, to determine when and if they are being sued. And, in fact, to find in favor of NOWI would protect plaintiffs in the way that I just described.
You think EA Green Bay didn't know that it was in arbitration, in effect?
It, of course, knew the arbitration was ongoing, but it is our position that EA Green Bay did not have real knowledge that it might actually be liable for the franchise's liabilities after that franchise was terminated.
After it was terminated. Maybe before.
Correct.
It was terminated.
Correct. But in this case, the franchise was terminated before we even got to Milwaukee County for the confirmation proceeding. So I don't think that with...
The liability arose before the franchise was terminated.
It did, yes. And then, Your Honors, I'm sorry.
In view of this latter argument, is that the issue that needs to be decided here? Or what is the real issue that needs to be decided here?
The real issue from our perspective is that this judgment, because it is against a trade name and not a legal entity, is not one that can be enforced in garnishment. And therefore, this garnishment action in Brown County must be dismissed.
Even if it had not been dissolved,
Even if EA Green Bay had not been dissolved?
If NOWI was still going strong, you would say there cannot be a garnishment action against it?
It's my understanding that if NOWI were still in existence, that there are procedures under the franchise agreement that SEWI could have utilized to enforce its judgment and to collect from NOWI.
What about in court?
Yeah, it continues to be our position that in court, a garnishment action filed against what I think the case law says is a legal non-entity is not enforceable.
Counselor, I noticed in your answer in affirmative defenses in your notice of motion to dismiss, you allege that EA Green Bay was never properly served, and that was the question that I'd asked your opposing counsel, and he said, well, we served one of their officers. Will you want to address my concerns about service of EA Green Bay, please?
Yes. It's our position that EA Green Bay was not properly served and was not properly put on notice because EA Green Bay was never named in these pleadings. So, again, EA Green Bay, given the context of these franchise agreements that they were operating under, did not really have notice that entity might be responsible for the franchise's liabilities and judgments. So that was the issue with service that was raised in our circuit court brief.
What about my example of an individual? I can make it quite simple. Everything started out in my pre-married name. I married, used a different name. Everything else is now in the court system under my pre-married name. I get served under my pre-married name. Can I just come in and say, hey, I'm not Shirley pre-married name. I have no notice because I'm not Shirley pre-married name.
In that circumstance, I believe our statutes would allow for the plaintiff to then amend the complaint or file to amend the complaint, and I think that would be the fair result in that case. I mean, to expand on your example, if you were to take your previous name and sell it the way a trade name could be sold to another individual or to another entity, or say you were to allow another one of your fellow justices to use your prior name, could a different individual then be liable for your debt because they were using your prior name? I think that's the result that we would come to if this court were to adopt SEWI's position. So, yes, I think even in your example, the plaintiff would have to discover your legal name and use it in order to have a valid judgment.
And they would do that in the garnishment action?
I think for a garnishment action, for any legal action, yes, you would have to name the legal entity. In this case, however, we have an underlying judgment in Milwaukee County that doesn't name a legal entity. So I think it would not be appropriate to just all of a sudden name that entity in the garnishment proceeding, although it seems that's what SEWI is attempting to do.
Your whole case rests, does it not, on the concept that Paul Davis Restoration, Northeast Wisconsin, is not an entity.
Yes.
It is not a distinct legal entity.
Yes.
It is a name.
Yes.
Therefore, no judgment can be taken against it. It is not an entity.
Yes.
Therefore, the judgment in Milwaukee County was void, which is what the Court of Appeals said. And if the judgment is void, then the garnishment is no good.
Correct.
And that's really the whole basis of your argument, is it not?
Correct.
Doesn't matter that the franchise is gone. Same result would be even if the franchise was still in existence, although you may have other remedies.
Yes.
But court remedy, the same thing would be true.
Yes, that is our
You're going to sue, you have to sue in a corporate name, or a partnership name, or some recognized legal entity.
Yes, that's correct. And it is our position that even in this case, SEWI had opportunities when it could have at least litigated that issue or attempted to name a legal entity, and it was never done.
Well, they did litigate it. They litigated, you litigated it in the garnishment action. That's why we're here.
That's true, Your Honor. But even in the Milwaukee County proceeding, I'm talking more about the confirmation proceedings. I think it would have been more appropriate to litigate the issue there. It was litigated to some extent because our client objected to being named at the stage of judgment.
Didn't they say they'd be bound anyway, or words to that effect?
I'm sorry, didn't they say what?
Didn't the Green Bay Corporation, in effect, tell the Milwaukee court system that they're bound anyway?
Oh,
On the judicial estoppel
issue. And I wanted to get to that issue next. Yes, EA Green Bay's counsel at the time of the Milwaukee County proceedings made what I believe was an erroneous statement to the court at that time. But I also, I want to make sure that it's clear.
What did counsel say?
I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I believe counsel said that he believed a judgment against a trade name would be enforceable. However, the issue being litigated at the time of those proceedings was not the enforcement or the enforceability of this judgment. Our position is that even if this court gets to the issue of judicial estoppel, that judicial estoppel does not apply in this case for a number of reasons. According to case law, there are three factors that have to be satisfied in order for there to be judicial estoppel.
Right.
First, a party against whom the estoppel is sought, in this case that's us, presents a later position that is clearly inconsistent with an earlier position.
Mm-hmm.
It's our position in this case that those initial comments in Milwaukee County were not a legal position because the issue being litigated at that point in time was whether EA Green Bay could be added to the judgment when it was never served and when it was never named in the underlying pleadings. So the issue of whether that judgment was enforceable was not what was being litigated, although there were some comments made by both counsel at that time regarding whether they thought it could be. So we don't satisfy the first factor. The second factor is that the facts at issue must be the same in both cases. And the third is that the party to be estopped convinced the first court to adopt its position. And again, it's our position that those were not legal positions taken at that time because this issue was not before the Milwaukee County Court. But finally, judicial estoppel cannot apply in cases of mistake. And I think based on the case law that I have seen, that was a mistaken comment by EA Green Bay's then counsel.
Mistake of fact, mistake of law, mistake of what?
It would be a mistake of law, I guess, on his part, that he misunderstood or didn't know what the law said about trade names and enforceability of judgments. But it was not an attempt to commit a fraud against the court or to, you know, play fast and loose with the courts. I think that's the terminology in the case law. It was none of those things, and I don't think the record supports
that. Wasn't
it
an attempt to make sure that that corporation wasn't named in that proceeding?
I don't know whether it was an attempt to make sure the corporation
was
named.
That was what your client wanted, didn't want
to be named. That was my client's position. It was my client's position.
Now, I can understand about not naming the individual because that may be protected by the corporate structure. But this was a corporation doing business in a name, and the DBA was the party.
I understand, Your Honor, but again, SEWI had an opportunity to name EA Green Bay if it wished to include EA Green Bay in this litigation. The proper time to do that would have been when it initiated the proceedings in Milwaukee County, or even after that, it could have moved to amend its initial pleadings. It could have simply amended them. I believe the statutes give timelines for all of that, and none of that was ever done.
Counselor, it was no secret who was the corporate entity that was underlying the DBA, correct?
Correct.
I did not look at the Court of Appeals briefs, And as often is the case, the Court of Appeals, as well as we do sometimes, decides the case on an issue that it considers dispositive. Here, the underlying judgment is void, is unenforceable, and can't form the basis of a garnishment action. And the Court of Appeals did not address your alternative arguments. Was lack of service one of those issues that you preserved for appeal or did appeal to the Court of Appeals?
No, I don't believe that was one of the specific issues we appealed. We appealed the issue of whether a judgment could be enforced against a trade name, and we also appealed the issue of whether the funds in that account were garnishable under the garnishment statutes in the first place.
So although you raised it as an affirmative defense, that's where it stopped. It didn't go to the Court of Appeals as an issue with regard to improper service?
I don't recall that that issue was one of the ones specifically laid out in our Court of Appeals brief.
Did the Circuit Court rule on whether service had been proper or not on the corporate entity?
No, I don't believe so.
The arguments in your Court of Appeals brief was, one, whether the Circuit Court erred in denying debtor's motion to dismiss in light of the fact that the judgment is void because it was entered against a DBA designation. That was your first argument in the Court of Appeals. Second argument, which is the same one you're making here.
Yes, that is the same one.
Whether the Circuit Court erred in denying NOW Northeast's motion to dismiss in light of the fact that the funds held by Denmark don't belong to Northeast or any underlying legal entity, but belong to an unrelated third party, Works, which, of course, is owned by the wife of Matt.
Yes.
Right. So that was your second argument. That was a garnishment argument. Your third argument, whether the Circuit Court should have applied the garnishment exemptions, but we didn't get, no one got to that, and that's not repeated here, I don't think.
No, that issue was not appealed to this
court. So what we're doing is here, and before our court, is the Court of Appeals first argument, and that's the one they held on.
That's correct. I notice that I have a red light. May I address the collateral attack issue briefly
quickly.
I close? Okay, thank you. I guess the only comment they have on that final issue are that NOWI was not the party who filed the garnishment summons and complaint in this action. So the garnishment summons and complaint could perhaps be characterized as a collateral action here because the Milwaukee County judgment is the underlying action. However, it was SEWI who has actually filed a collateral action in this case. Counsel has stated that his client was confident when that was filed that they could enforce the judgment in the garnishment proceedings. However, at the time of the Milwaukee County hearing, counsel for SEWI also stated on the record that it was his understanding that a judgment against a trade name was not enforceable. And even despite that understanding, they've now filed a garnishment action, and it seems they're attempting to relitigate these issues in a collateral action. So it's our position that this is not in any way a collateral attack on a judgment by our client. We are taking, based on my reading of the case law, the only correct legal position here, which is that NOWI as a trade name is not a legal entity and that the judgment against it cannot be enforced.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Bardozzi, I'm sorry. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I understand it takes a lot of courage to stand up here and argue on behalf of your client. And I don't want to be too aggressive in my rebuttal, but that argument was a microcosm of the last 3 years. It's an argument of now you see me, now you don't. In this venue, I've got this hat on. In this venue, I've got this hat on. The person under the hat we have, it was the franchise holder who came into my client's territory, took business from my client, and did not pay for it. The liability is undisputed. That franchisor has the money to pay the damages that he caused to my client, and the court cannot let him walk away from those on what is strictly a technical argument, which in my opinion is not even supported by the case law under the Jacobs, Binion, and Cap Savage cases, which say that an entity and it's a trade name are indistinct. And I think that that indisputably also answers the jurisdiction question. And to essentially play dumb about the arbitration is incredibly misleading, because the attorney that represented Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin is Rob Bellin, who's here, and they're in the same firm. And to, and I don't know if it's to treat strategic or for whatever reason, to act as if they were not, didn't participate in that and didn't know what happened, I think is misleading.
Why didn't you just name the LLC too if you knew who it was?
And that's another misleading statement. We did not know who it was.
Really? Well, when did you learn that the underlying corporate entity under the DBA was the LLC?
After the arbitration.
Before you filed the action in Milwaukee County, right?
Correct. And that's why we moved to correct it.
Did you move to amend did you move to name them as another party?
Absolutely. Under 788.11, we undertook the proper procedure. Under 788.11, a county court can amend or correct an incomplete arbitration award. There's a specific statute in there that we followed, which is how we attempted to have EA Green Bay LLC named as the entity. The only way, when we filed the arbitration action, we got the name to file the arbitration against from two things, from the trucks that entered our territory, the big white trucks, big construction trucks that say Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. There's also a franchise circular. This is the franchise circular. All the franchisees get the same circular. There's over 225 franchisees of this franchise. One of the first exhibits on the circular is a roster. The roster identifies the territory and identifies the owner. We identified Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin on that basis. In addition, from previous cross-territory transactions, we received checks from Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin from the Denmark State Bank account, which only bared that name. So we were confident that we had the right guy. And a couple of other points that I want to address quickly.
I just want to get back to your statement about you tried to amend. You filed the action in Milwaukee County to confirm an arbitration award that was against the DBA. When you got into there, by the time you got into there, you knew that there was a corporate entity. And you moved the circuit court to add that corporate entity as a party to the circuit court action under 788.11, right?
We moved the circuit court, correct. We
as a party.
I don't think I can box in that question. We moved them to correct the award to be entered against EA Green Bay LLC doing business as Paul Davis of Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin.
And they fought that.
And to say that that was not an issue is completely misleading. At that hearing, part of our argument is we're not sure. We know that they're the same entity. We know that there's no dispute about that. We know what the liability is, but we're not sure, and the court needs to look at this issue. And their response, and this is in the record, this isn't an incomplete record, their response at that hearing by their attorney was, first of all, the fact that someone operates under, an entity operates under a trade name does not mean that it is not also a business entity of its own. That doesn't follow as a matter of law. Secondly, regardless of that, a business operating under a trade name certainly can own all sorts of assets. And thirdly, the idea that as a matter of law, an entity operating under a, quote, DBA, meaning it's operating under a trade name, the idea that a judgment can't be enforced is simply untrue as a matter of law. That's the position they took in response to our motion. And they're taking the complete opposite position now. By taking that position in Milwaukee County, it took the issue off the table. Judge Pocan entered judgment Based on that argument, he would not have entered judgment against Paul Davis Restoration in Northeast Wisconsin if he didn't think it was enforceable.
I assume, do we have a record on all of this in this arbitration proceeding? Can we go back and see what was done in the circuit court?
Well, what's in the record is in the record. There's enough to support our position.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your reference.
Thank you, counsel.
Could I ask?
Justice Brasso.
The caption of this case, Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, Inc., versus Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. No ink.
It's not a corporation.
Did you folks somehow assume that this was a corporation?
I don't think it's... I think that the answer to the question is that there's value in that name. You purchase franchise rights because you get the franchise. You get to put Paul Davis Restoration on all your stuff. The industry standard is Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, and that's... that you operate as the entity that you incorporate under. So we were comfortable based on the trucks that came into the territory, the checks that we received, the roster, that they were the same thing. And again, when we filed the arbitration, we didn't know about EA Green Bay LLC, but we knew who the franchisor was, the franchisee was, and the franchisee showed up and litigated. They had their day in court. They were found liable. And now they're just making a loophole semantic argument to try to avoid paying damages. And it's just not right.
Thank you, counsel. I want to thank both Adam Bardossi and Natalie Sturchitz about their arguments and their briefs in a case involving doing business under a different name than incorporation or not incorporation. And it's not the first time, as you all know, we've had the case, although the three primary cases are Court of Appeals cases. So thank you for your arguments. Thank you for your briefs. And that closes our argument in 11-AP-1121, Paul Davis Restoration of Southeast Wisconsin, Inc. versus Paul Davis Restoration of Northeast Wisconsin. The court is adjourned for oral arguments in the March calendar. The court will meet in a closed session at 3:25.